The questions you always had. The answers you were never given. The place to seek the truth. Welcome to Veritas.
Tonight, we're diving into the fascinating intersection of UFO phenomena and the concept of time travel with John Ventry, a notable figure in the field of ufology. Ventry's journey into the mysteries of the unknown is fueled by a deep-seated curiosity about extraterrestrial life and the potential for human advancement through time travel technologies. His work with the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, has placed him at the forefront of research into unexplained aerial phenomena, making him an authoritative voice on the subject. In our conversation, Ventry will challenge us to rethink traditional narratives surrounding UFO sightings, proposing the idea that these encounters could be the result of time travel experiments originating from human innovation. This theory prompts a reevaluation of events like the Roswell incident, suggesting they might not be extraterrestrial in nature, but rather tests of advanced technology developed in secrecy. Ventry's background, which includes significant contributions to the study and public discussion of UFOs, equips him with a unique perspective on the Pentagon's recent openness about UFO investigations. His insights into the implications of time travel for humanity and the mysteries of the universe promise to captivate and enlighten. Join us tonight as John Ventry takes us on a journey through the complexities of time and space, offering a glimpse into the future of ufology and our understanding of the cosmos. This discussion is set to challenge our perceptions and open up new avenues of thought about the reality of UFOs and the possibilities of time travel. John Ventry is coming up next.
Welcome to Veritas. If this is your first time listening, welcome home. To access tonight's full interview and all of our exclusive material, simply join the Veritas Plus family by clicking on the subscribe button at veritasradio.com. And while you're there, don't forget to check out the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the power of FLFE with a 15-day free trial today. No credit card required. Discover the Veritas Digest series on Amazon. Multiple volumes, each unveiling the truths they don't want you to know. It's more than just reading. It's an awakening. Secure your copies today. If you're looking to get in touch with Mel, have a guest suggestion, or would like to provide feedback, simply click on the contact button on our website at veritasradio.com. So sit back, relax, and enjoy tonight's show. And now here's your host, Mel Hastelrich.
And the title of the new book is They Are Us, The Time Travel False Flag. Directly from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, I'd like to welcome John Ventry. Hello, John, and welcome to Veritas.
Just turned off my portable heater. It's making noise, and it's like 33 degrees here, so I just realized it was on. But thanks for having me on.
My pleasure. Well, John, first question. I've been talking to you for the past couple of weeks, and I'd like to know, how did somebody like you get into the UFO topic?
Yeah, well, it's different than any other. But let me ask you, did you watch Hangar One, the UFO Files, on History Channel back in 2014 and 15, and then it was on again in 2019 under a different name?
No, coincidentally, I put it on to be watched after the show today.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah, I was like the lead co-host in that. And a lot of people had said I was the face of MUFON in that. We could talk about that later, how the show got taken down and all that. But, you know, the way I got started was very different. Nearly everybody I know in the UFO field had a UFO encounter. They saw something. They think they might have been abducted, missing time. I never had any of that. Matter of fact, I was famous Monsters of Filmland, HorrorCon, Comic-Con person my whole life. You know, I collected magazines. I got about 100 famous Monsters of Filmland. And what happened was I was working on special assignment with UPS. I was traveling for 18 months. I was only home on weekends, and it was really boring. I'm not a drinker, you know, so I just, and this is how all my books, matter of fact, you know, this book, you know, after the encounter and all of that, I just started getting all these ideas on it, like downloaded in my head, how to put it together, what else to include and stuff. So it's funny how that works, you know, because you've heard, you know, musicians and other people say, I don't know how I wrote that, you know, Mozart or Beethoven, it got downloaded in my head. And that's how, when I write my books, these ideas come from somewhere. They're in my head. But, you know, so I started work writing an end time prophecy book on the Mayan calendar, you know, on 12/21/2012. I started that in 1995. It was like the end of 95, beginning of 96. And in my research on all these different cultures and end time prophecy, I came across a lot of stuff about what looks sound like UFOs and extraterrestrials, you know, people on flying shields, you know, star people, that type of stuff, you know, probably from 6-7 different cultures, because I was trying to find out what they believed on end time prophecy. So I'm writing the book, and then I said, you know what? I got to look into this MUFON thing, you know, this UFO thing, and join, you know. I mean, all I knew about, I knew nothing. I was 41 when I decided to join MUFON. All I knew is that, you know, I watched the X-Files, and they would mention the MUFON investigator. I said, who are these MUFON people? As a matter of fact, Sightings was one of my favorite shows, too, on Fox. Yeah. Sightings and X-Files. So I would see this UFO stuff, but I had no interest in it. So that's way different than I think anyone else in this field. Almost everyone had an encounter, you know, and that's how they got involved in it. So I ended up at 41 in 1998 joining MUFON. And, you know, for about a year or so, they assigned me cases. I became a state section director. And then it like went dark. You know, I'm busy, really busy at work as a state security director. I had 3 states for UPS. So I'm really busy, and I'm trying to do this stuff on the side. And the state director here, just, he didn't assign cases, didn't do anything. So probably a year and a half goes by or so. And I see we get a new international director. And I ended up emailing him and said, you know, what's going on here? I forgot I was a MUFON investigator. Nobody gave me a case for a year and a half, I don't know what it was. So he replies back. He gives me a bigger territory. I said, okay, no problem. I said, I run 3 states for UPS, so I can do that. And it was like, you know, a month later, he emails me back and says, hey, I looked at your resume as a state security director. Do you want to be the state director for Mutual UFO Network for PA? I said, yeah, I can do that. That sounds good. You know, I still didn't have a ton of experience in the field. So now I thought I got to become a subject matter expert and start reading books and start finding stuff out. So, you know, I did that. I think it was 2006 that he made me the state director.
So you were not into any of this before you were 41?
That was 1998 that I joined at 41. I knew zero about UFOs.
That's what I'm saying. You were not into any of this when you were younger.
No, not a
thing. Wow, okay.
Not a single thing other than the movies Alien and Predator and, you know, some of the black and white movies from the 40s and 50s, but, you know, Earth versus the Flying Saucers. But I knew no facts. I couldn't tell you one name of one person in this field. And, you know, I believe, without bragging, that, you know, it's 7-8 years ago, you know, when I'm doing the TV shows on history and all of that, and writing, you know, 4 or 5 books on this topic, that I am considered a subject matter expert and a top 10 historian in the field on UFOs. And I think if you look at this book, They Are Us, maybe about a third of the way in, whatever, there's a chapter, it's about 80, 85 pages that gives the entire history of the UFO field in chronological order with a ton of information that you probably never heard of. And all stuff I discovered along the way in reading and talking to people and doing investigations. But so that's how I got in. And then 2008, So I'm like, I'm the director now, the state director for a year, let's say a year and a half max. And we start getting a wave, a UFO wave. It started up in Lake Erie. People were seeing something that they thought was coming out of Lake Erie, like a triangular craft with three lights on it. And I started getting reports, like there were even guys in Ohio contacting me because it was right on the Pennsylvania border there with Erie. East Lake, Ohio might have been the first report I got. And then in Erie, and all similar reports. Then I started looking at it, you know, and it's like, okay, now they reported it. Now I got a report in Wheeling, West Virginia, you know, that's down here towards the Pennsylvania Turnpike in the south, then a bunch of reports in Pittsburgh, then a bunch of reports in State College in the middle of the state, you know, almost like it came down Route 79, made a right to go on the Pennsylvania Turnpike east. And, you know, then they crossed over Penn State and it, you know, it's like 15 minutes apart, and the descriptions are the same. I said, something's going on here. This is real, and these people are seeing this. And then the number of reports in Philly, and particularly in Bucks County, went crazy. You know, at that time, for the prior couple of years, we were getting 92, 93 cases a year, maybe two a week, a little bit less than two cases a week. And in this 3 month period, we got, I think it was 253 just in 3 months, you know, and probably 200 of them close to that was in Bucks County. And so my, it wasn't my first big case. I did a few others, but this was the big, big case, you know, and we were just going crazy trying to stay up with what people were saying. And Bob Gardner was the investigator around Bucks County in Philly, and he did a great job trying to organize this because, you know, at the time I became state director, we only had eight or nine investigators for the whole state. That's all we had, you know, and I think at the time I retired a couple of years ago, we had about 40 investigators. So, you know, and the number of people subscribing to MUFON had tripled, you know. But so there were two cases in particular that were incredible with this investigation. There was a lot of different cases, you know, that were reported with interesting stuff. But we got these two cases, this woman in Levittown, Denise. And she claims her dog woke her up a couple of times, three or four times at around 4 a.m. And, you know, she went out in the backyard and she saw a triangular craft approaching this way towards her house. And one time she saw it a couple of times. One time it actually stopped and hovered over her yard and it dropped some sort of probes. She called them metallic sprinkles, like, you know, pixie dust or something. So these probes drop into her tree. They look like a Christmas tree now. It's all lit up. And then they're sucked back up like a magnet, you know, with metal. They were just pulled back up, you know. And so she files her reports. At the same time, there was a guy named Cliff, an architect. He lived in a beautiful house, probably a $3 million home. And he, same thing. He reports his dog wakes him up, you know, around 4 a.m. And, you know, he sleeps in a different bedroom than his wife because he snores. But the first time, you know, and he sees this large six-sided round, but six-sided like the Pentagon, you know, was six-sided. And it looks like, there's lightning one time and you can see through it like it was six triangular UFOs docked on a mothership, because when the heat lightning went off, you could see through the seams and he could actually see it. But he said, John, this thing was huge and it was moving. He said, John, this was moving like 25 miles an hour. You know, if it had to be a balloon, let's say, it couldn't be a airplane or anything. And but he knew it wasn't a balloon. And, you know, so he says that he saw the second time he saw it, he got his wife out of bed. They went in the backyard that's when the heat lightning storm was, and they saw it, right? So he said, then it turned to the northeast, like heading towards New York, and it went that direction. Interesting thing he told me, though, and we never said this when we did 4 TV shows with these cases, and I was on the Anderson Cooper show in 2012 defending 3 female witnesses, right? But he said he didn't want this in the notes. He said, John, when I saw it, I heard organ music, you know, almost like tubular bells, you know, the organ music in a church. And he thought he was going crazy. He said, what is this? He goes, am I losing my mind? You know, and we assured him he wasn't, because we got 250 other people reporting cases, you know. But then, amazingly, what happens is MUFON does its first TV show at this time on Discovery Channel called UFOs Over Earth. So they do an episode in North Carolina. They do an episode in Mexico. They need a third case, and they were aware this was going on. So they said, John, this is a big case. Let's put this as the third episode. And we'll put it on Discovery Channel, which was good and bad. It was you don't want to bring that type of attention to the area until you're done with the case. But the Discovery Channel helped us tremendously with the investigation because they paid for analysis, you know, samples. You know, we cut leaves off the tree. We took soil samples. We did all this stuff and they paid for it. They actually sent it to 3 different labs on Denise's case. Now, we couldn't do that. You know, the investigators, they paid their own way. MUFON don't pay anything for us. I'm in Pittsburgh. This is Philadelphia. I got to drive 253 miles to get there, you know. So, but it was really good. And so that's the big case. And, you know, it airs in November. But it was funny that the media did a lot of coverage on it, the newspaper and the news and all of that. And then this guy has he opens up a week before 4th of July selling fireworks. And he says, I know what it is. I sell Chinese lanterns. So they do a thing on Chinese lanterns and say, oh, problem solved. It was just a Chinese lantern. And so they kind of, that's why you don't want, you know, a lot of attention in the media. They killed the case pretty much at that point before the show even aired, you know. But what we did is we got about a dozen of the witnesses together at 10 at night after the mall closed, and we lit off 3 or 4 Chinese lanterns. And, you know, everybody observed that they don't stay up very long and they don't go very high. You know, if they go 200 feet, 300 feet max, you can see it's a Chinese lantern and boom, then it just comes down. I don't know how they don't set things on fire when they land, you know. But we asked the witnesses and they were very offended at that point and said, that doesn't look anything like what we saw. They said, that was not it. That's BS that the newspaper would say that without talking to us. So what we did was we went to the store. And I questioned the owner, and he had opened up end of June. And, you know, and I'm saying to the producer who's there and the cameraman says, well, these cases started in March, April, May. The bulk of the cases were done before this guy even opened his store. We had 220 of the 253 cases, let's say, before he opened. So, and what the people were reporting was, like multicolored objects, blue, green, white light, red light. So I asked the guy, what colors do these come in? And he says, just this one kind of clear kind of color, tan, let's say. And I said, they don't come in other colors? He said, no. I said, well, how can this be what they saw? It doesn't match the description at all. So we proved that was not what the people were saying. But it did get the heat off, let's say, for us to be able to conduct and finish the investigation without the media involved now reporting this and that. But there was a lot of interesting things to it. So we send the history, you know, we took samples, and the History Channel sent it to three different labs on the tree. I'm talking about Denise's case on the metallic sprinkles. We took her tree, the leaves from another tree in the yard, one from, you know, like.
Thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasradio.com. Because you don't want to believe, you want to know. Subscribe now. To listen to the rest and all of our exclusive material, proceed to the Veritas Plus member section or join the Veritas Plus family by subscribing. Click on the subscribe button at veritasradio.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for focused life force energy. Get a 15-day free trial today with no credit card required. And if you want to get in touch with Mel, want to be a guest on this radio program, have a guest suggestion, or have feedback, just click on the contact button on our website at veritasradio.com. Now, proceed to the Veritas Plus member section or subscribe to listen to the rest of the interview. You don't want to miss it. Because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at VeritasRadio.com.